here we go. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, girl, I'm out here in these streets. As they say, they not like us.
Out here in the streets, what streets is she out on? And they not like us? Why is she talking like that? That's the vice president. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. Let's do it. A fascinating story. I mean, it says so much about human nature, I guess, right? Kamala Harris, the vice president of the United States, is furious that she's being snubbed. She's barely mentioned as a replacement for Mr. Biden, and apparently she feels that people should be talking about her instead of, I mean, like, why are they talking about Michelle Obama? Why are they talking about Gavin Newsom? Why are they talking about Gretchen Whitmer, right? But she has a couple of real problems, does the vice president. For one, in actuality, her poll numbers are miserable. I mean, they're as bad, in some cases worse, than the president's poll numbers. But apparently, Ms. Harris has not been taking that rejection in the polls very well. She certainly isn't looking at this and saying, oh, I can figure it out. Instead, she seems to be sending out her, listen to this, she's sending out her surrogates to defend her. But you may find the way that they're defending her to be particularly troubling. Let's take a listen to what one of her surrogates told Politico. Here it is. I'm going to read it for you. You ready? This is the quote. This is in Politico. She says, this surrogate, this is so offensive to so many of us. They still don't get that the message that they're sending to people, to the Democratic Party, is we prefer a white person. Wow. So suddenly it's all about racism? And I guess to prove that she feels that she is very black and that she is a woman and she can prove that, the vice president's office has put out this video out, right? And I frankly think it's a little embarrassing. It's an ad where she literally speaks is in an urban accent, an urban dialect, complete with black, with really bad grammar. Here it is. Here's the vice president of the United States in a new ad.
Yeah, girl, I'm out here in these streets. And let me tell you, you're right, Taraji. There is so much at stake in this moment. The majority of us believe in freedom and equality. But these extremists, as they say, they not like us.
No, they not.
They not like us. They not. Does that sound authentic to you? And by the way, what streets is she out on in Washington, D.C.? This whole idea that to relate to African-Americans, you have to somehow speak like that. As a Latino-American, I got to tell you, I don't like it when people come up to me and start calling me Jose and start acting like, you know, hey, Rico Suave, what's going on, dude? I mean, I don't like that. I don't think most people, whether you're Asian, African-American, or a hillbilly from the South, you don't need to do that to try and get people to like you. And by the way, I think she's being rejected, Manila, because she's not authentic. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, the polls are saying people don't like her. What do you think?
Yeah, I am still trying to process all of that, Rick. I mean, I have zero idea what the Veep is saying or what she's trying to convey. I mean, I took a ton of philosophy courses in college, Rick, but I mean, all of this, every time she gets on stage, it's either word salad or mumbo jumbo that.
I got that. I think I have, do we have that? Victor, do we have this? Put the video up.
Word salad?
Yeah, put the video up for doing the word salad thing. Here it is.
It's very important, as you have heard from so many incredible leaders, for us at every moment in time, and certainly this one, to see the moment in time in which we exist and are present.
To see the moment in time in which we exist in our present. I'm sorry if this sounds wrong to say this, but what in the hell is she talking about? What is that? What is she saying?
I don't know. It really is just word salad. It's mumbo jumbo. I mean, it's stuff like that that gives constituents pause, right? When they realize that woman is one heartbeat away from being POTUS. Now, we've talked about this on this show before. We've established that on the surface, she has all the trappings of what should be a great career, but her tenure as VP is without any notable achievements, completely unremarkable. I mean, she's like the female Dan Quayle. And as we know with old Dan, right, he never had much of a political career following his time as Veep. That was the apex of his life in politics, as this will be for Kamala Harris. And you know what, Rick? She can't say that anyone is holding her back because of her sex or her race or whatever. Yeah. Because she will go in the way of Dan Quayle into political obsolescence. Quayle was a cis, white, Christian male that was cookie cutter to the establishment designs of what an American politician looks like. And where did he go? Nowhere.
You know why?
I would be shocked.
Because he was never comfortable in his skin, and neither is she. And in life, if there's one thing I've learned in this business, and I think you have too, is you just have to be yourself. Stop trying to act like somebody else or trying to sound like somebody else. Just be who you are and communicate with people, and they'll be okay with you. Half might hate you, half might like you, but at least they're going to say, okay, that Sanchez or that Manila, they're okay. If you try and do this whole mumbo-jumbo thing that you described that she was doing with her poetry, people are going to say, wait, what the hell is she talking about? All right, listen, there's another story regarding Mr. Biden that we got to get to. It's being delivered by none other than one of the most famous and respected journalists in U.S. history, Carl Bernstein. Of Watergate fame, obviously, as you know, his journalism or his reporting took down President Nixon, says he has exclusive information that people close to Biden recognized his condition between a year to 6 months ago. And they tried to talk about it, and they called the White House folks and said, you got a problem, but they ignored them, they shut them down. And they also recognized, they said at the time, according to Bernstein's reporting, that it was getting worse. Here.
That there have been numerous instances where the president has lost his train of thought, can't pick it up again. There was a fundraiser at which he started at the podium, and then he became very stiff, according to the people there, as if it were almost a kind of rigor mortis.
This was reported allegedly in June of 2020.
This was June of, this was a year ago almost exactly, at the old Four Seasons restaurant on Park Avenue. And he became very stiff, and a chair had to be brought for him to do the latter part of the event.
Obviously, look, we all knew about this, right? Manila, you knew about this. I reported it. You've reported it. We've talked about this. A lot of people who are paying attention were reporting this. It's fascinating that they have to bring out the guy who took down Nixon to suddenly sit with Anderson Cooper and explain to him what we all saw a year ago so that Anderson could say, oh, so this was happening a year ago, huh? It just seems like a Fellini movie to me.
Well, look, Rick, I mean, we're pulling out Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward, as it were, that iconic duo, as you said, that brought down the Nixon presidency. But let's not forget that his colleague on that story, Bob Woodward, had direct connections to the CIA. And the majority of the men who broke into the Watergate building were CIA operatives. So why am I bringing this up? Because of those ties, Rick. I mean, I would say this lends credibility to Carl Bernstein's remarks about Biden very seriously, considering stepping aside ahead of the August 19 Democratic convention. It tells me that the intelligence community has lost faith in Biden's ability to carry forth unofficial Washington's goals, and that they want a new body in that position, that Biden will no longer cut it, that they have seriously been monitoring Biden's mental capacity for some time now, and the jig is up. And I can guarantee you those backroom talks with potential replacements are taking place right now as we speak. And the only people still pushing old Joe to continue is probably Jill and Hunter.
Yeah, Evita Perón herself. By the way, we've got a former CIA agent coming up on the back half, Larry Johnson.
Perfect.
And I'm going to ask him about that. So good. Dean Phillips, Democratic congressman from Minnesota, recently voted to punish the International Criminal Court for calling out Israel for war crimes and for genocide. He's also the same guy who praised the ICC, the same organization, when they criticized Russia. He said the ICC was within their jurisdiction to criticize Mr. Putin, but they're out of their jurisdiction when they criticize Mr. Netanyahu. What? All right, here he is getting called out on it.
Look, I think the way the ICC went about it was absolutely incorrect.
Why?
But do I believe, because they didn't follow their own standards, and they were beyond their purview. Of course, Israel and the U.S. not party to the ICC.
Nor is Russia.
And I think, by
Hold
the
on,
way...
Nor is, well, first of all, Palestine is party to the ICC, as you know, and Russia isn't, and we all supported the ICC arrest warrants against Putin. Biden was happy with it, said it was good.
Like I just said, this is beyond their purview, and secondly...
Why is Putin not beyond their purview, but Netanyahu is?
Well, I think the whole methodology, frankly, of the ICC right now...
I get that, but we didn't have a... But you didn't vote for sanctions on the ICC when they went after Putin, only after Netanyahu.
I understand.
Caught red-handed. Nothing like it. By the way, U.S. politicians love to sanction. We know that. But in this case, this guy and the others, they not only sanction the head of the ICC, Manila, a woman who was a respected diplomat and international expert in law. They're also going after her children. U.S. congressmen writing law to go after the children of the head of the ICC because they went after Israel. Watch.
It didn't just go after ICC officials, but also, quote, the immediate family members of ICC officials. That is mob-like behavior, is it not, to go after family members?
And that's, and by the way, 95% of what we vote on in Congress has elements that we find distasteful. That's our job
in
Congress. We have a choice. I stand by that vote, of course.
So you stand, hold on. You stand by putting sanctions on ICC Chief Prosecutor Karim Khan's two adult sons. What did they do wrong?
Mehdi, what I stand by is a vote. First of all, we have votes in Congress that we know will not end up going anywhere. We have votes that we know will probably be signed into law. They have very different consequences.
So you voted for this one because you don't think it'll be signed into law?
Well, first of all, I voted for this as a message because I do think it's a principle.
A message to ICC Chief Prosecutor Karim Khan's two sons. What did they do wrong?
Now, you know that's not what my intent was.
That wasn't my intent, but I did it anyway. This is crazy. When I say Fellini movie, I mean Fellini movie. Manila, I mean, we're down to a minute because I want to get to Larry, but when you watch that, what are you thinking?
First, I got to say, Rick, I am really liking this new Mehdi Hasan 2.0. But look, Congressman Dean Phillips of Minnesota's District 3, I believe, he had launched this long-shot presidential primary bid against Biden, but he didn't get his name on any other state primary ballot other than his. So he's like the gelato king of Minnesota, by the way. I think he's really trying to make a name for himself within establishment politics, mostly making nice with AIPAC. But I think he's just really falling in line with every other Democrat that we're seeing these days in the hypocrisy of bad ICC, you can't touch Israel, but good ICC to go after evil Putin. He's just par for the course. And just like you said on the issue of issuing sanctions, I mean, we've seen this exercised in sanctions that the U.S. doles out all around the world against political foes. Take, for example, Saddam Hussein. While the U.S. had initiated sanctions against him directly, we later added his adult children to the sanctions list as well. So I would say, Rick, this is just business as usual right here in Washington.
By the way, I don't know how you can get rich selling gelato in Minnesota when you basically have one month to sell it. It's like a little cold. July is when we eat gelato in Minnesota. Sorry. I have no reason. I have no idea why I went there, but I thought that was funny when you said that. Good stuff. Hey, listen, have a great 4th of July. See you later.
Thank you. You too.
When we come back, is Volodymyr Zelensky finally succumbing to reality? Does he realize now that soon he will have no military? He will have no soldiers? And then what's he going to do? What's the U.S. going to do? My guest is a former CIA analyst who's written about this particular topic. He is the man in the bright orange shirt. Larry C. Johnson joins me next after the break. Please don't go away. All right, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's continue this incredibly fun and smart conversation. To do that, I'm joined by a smart guy, Larry Johnson, who recently argued that NATO is finally starting to understand the severity of the situation in Russia, as Russia inflicts heavy casualties on Ukrainian forces. Larry also has mentioned, by the way, that the Biden administration's promises of support, including providing Patriot missile launchers from Israel, are simply insufficient. As he says that the U.S. is reaching a limited production capacity, and we're going to get to that, I promise. But Larry, first let me ask you, since Manila brought this up and she got me to thinking, this thing that Bernstein was describing with the president of the United States 6 months ago having like rigor mortis in the middle of one of his speeches and stuff, what is the CIA's role?
Well, the CIA role in this is on the sidelines. I mean, they're just watching it, I think, like the rest of us, with horror, what's unfolding. What they ought to be doing, because I did it yesterday, is asking foreign leaders exactly, where do we stand? What do you think about seeing Joe Biden in this situation? Mm-hmm. I had a conversation with a senior Chinese academic, one who's well-known, and, you know, in the conversation, he's very formal. He's very self-effacing. He's not flamboyant, speaks in a very measured tone, until I asked him, I said, what did you think about the debate? And the first words out of his mouth, and I'm quoting, he goes, I laughed my ass off. Now, he was, and then he went on to talk about how alarmed the Chinese are, and he's in contact with senior Chinese leadership by what they're seeing in the United States. Because there's like, how their question is, how can you let this happen?
That's what I'm thinking. You're a CIA guy, right? Your job is to defend the United States from a position of intel and all other things. And you happen to be at a fundraiser for the president because you were asked to go there, assigned to go there, whatever. And you watch this man 6 months ago, according to Bernstein's reporting, literally having, as Bernstein said, the word rigor mortis, where he just froze up and couldn't move. You've got to be thinking, I got to write this up. I got to send it to somebody, and we got to maybe do something about it. No? Is that what they do?
Well, look, the CIA's official jobs ought to be convincing other people in other countries to commit treason, to give us information that we're not supposed to have,
right,
or to do independent analysis so the president has an objective look. The third function that has been really the dominant part of the CIA over the last 60 years is overthrowing governments. Perhaps we need to turn loose the CIA on Joe Biden and his team, because Biden and his team are putting the United States at great risk. And it's not just Biden. It's not just the political operatives surrounding him. It's the media. It's the Democratic establishment. It's social media giants. Everybody has enabled this guy over the last 3.5 years. You know, this was evident more than 4 years ago that he was mentally on the downhill slide, and yet everybody just went along with it. It was the modern day version of Hans Christian Andersen's The Emperor with No Clothes.
So everything he's done, for example, we'll use Ukraine as an example, and it's not the only example, where it almost seems like people around him are running roughshod. And by the way, to be fair, I thought Bolton and Pompeo did the same thing with Trump in many ways, with foreign policy.
I agree.
But these guys, while what they did in Venezuela, for example, and a few other places with Trump was bad, what these guys are doing with this $200 billion spending in a war in Ukraine seems to me even worse, because of the money, the lives, the blood, the actuality of the war. There are people in that White House who are telling this guy what to do, and the sicker and the more ill and the older he gets, the more they can do that, right?
Well, yeah, one of the jobs of a functioning president is not to be the expert on every subject, but to know how to ask the right questions to challenge both Department of Defense, CIA, State Department on their working assumptions. As an example, what a wise president would have asked when they came in with the recommendation, hey, if Russia invades, we're going to take it out of SWIFT and we're going to impose these draconian economic sanctions. And the question the president should have asked is, okay, can you give me one example where economic sanctions have worked to change the political policies of a government in history? Can you give me one example? And they would have gone, well, no. So then the next question is, then why in the hell are you recommending that we do something that's never worked against a country that's number one in the world in terms of economic resources? And up to this point, our policy has been to keep Russia and China apart. What you're talking about is going to drive Russia and China together, which it actually did. How does that benefit us as the United States? And at that point, you get the tap dancing display, as you know, CIA and DOD look like they're performing for a Broadway show.
Is that what you guys do in the CIA? I mean, part of your job is just to go along with military contractors in some cases to convince certain politicians to do things that might not necessarily actually be good for the country?
Well, from the analytical side, what you're supposed to do is to present as honest and objective presentation of activities as possible. But you invariably you run up against the politics. Huh. You know, if it's you know, I had the advantage when I was at the CIA, I was working on the war in Central America, which was one of the top three foreign policy items for then George Ronald Reagan and then later George H.W. Bush. So I had, you know, ready access, if you will, writing for the Presidential Daily Brief. But it was a two-edged sword. I also faced pushback, pressure to try to present a storyline that didn't necessarily actually reflect the facts. Mine's not the only experience with that. We saw that in the Vietnam War with George Allen, and we've seen that with Iraq and what happened with Saddam Hussein in both 1991 and then 2003. And we're seeing that again with Ukraine, except what's going on now. The CIA is not telling the president the truth. There is great pressure to shape and to tell a story, a narrative. That's a lie.
Why? Why would you lie to the president of the United States? People keep thinking me, telling me, and even people I talk to, you know, Uber drivers, yeah, this whole Ukraine thing, it's all about money, obviously. The people seem to get it. Is the CIA going to make more money by selling this? Are they in bed with the contractors? Well, what's going on there, Larry?
Well, the analysts, the managers, they'll make more money. They'll get promoted. I learned early on. I went into a meeting where we were new analysts, and our division chief asked us, hey, what's the problem? I understand we have some morale issues. And I was 31 at the time.
Yeah.
I was old enough. I should have known better, okay? Because I said, well, I know. And I basically told him the problem was that the bosses were not respecting the analysts. They were treating the analysts like a bunch of used Kleenexes. And instead of him going, gee, Larry, thanks for telling me that, he got mad. He turned the color of my shirt. He threw all the other analysts out of the room and proceeded to berate me and attack me for how dare you. Now, the guy had asked for feedback. I'm telling you right now that if any analyst dared to write a piece telling the White House that the war in Ukraine is lost, there's nothing you can do to salvage this, and you better figure out an exit strategy, that analyst would be demoted.
Wow.
They would not get promoted. Wow. And they would be probably put exiled to, you know, our version of Siberia.
Really? So contrasting,
oh, absolutely.
Contrasting
absolutely.
Points of view, conflictive points of view are simply not tolerated. That's what you're saying.
No. But in particular, this has been a gradual erosion of the CIA's capability. You know, back in the 1970s.
Is that, by the way, I got to ask because I'm curious. Is that true with Venezuela, with Iran, with China, with most of the so-called bad countries out there?
If you
say anything true or good, like if you say anything about them that doesn't fit the narrative, you're out of here.
It's true. For example, like with Hamas, I can take you to the Israeli Foreign Ministry site. It's on the government site.
Yeah.
This is not Larry Johnson information. This is not from some suspect third world country. This is from the Israeli government itself. They've detailed every act of Palestinian terrorism since the year 2000 I took the data off on April 26, 2024. Right. When you look at that data, you realize that Hamas doesn't even qualify as one of the major terrorist groups in the world. They talk about a total of 1,500 attacks, or 681 attacks over that time frame, and a total of 1,500 casualties.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, doesn't even begin to approach. And yet, from the CIA, if you write the objective, say, look, the reality is Hamas is not a terrorist organization. The Hamas is a religiously driven political independence movement that is using violence, but these guys have very specific political objectives. No difference, in fact, from what Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and Thomas Paine and all those other revolutionaries had when trying to kick the British out.
But
we're just doing it with an Islamic religious dimension to it.
Yeah, but we have to make them out to be the worst terrorists in the world and the most sophisticated organization in the history of man. Because if you don't say that, that's amazing.
And that's
eye-opening.
And the data just doesn't support it. I'm saying objective fact.
Right.
When you cannot present the objective facts and have an objective discussion about what's going on, that's where you get entirely corrupted, where the operations side of the CIA takes control and makes everything conform to that.
Your experience is so important to be able to share this with us, and we are so appreciative, Larry, of your time. Thanks so much, sir, for taking time to take us through this. It's important stuff.
Thank you, Rick. Always a pleasure to be with you again, man. Thanks.
Pleasure's all mine. Pleasure's all mine. Thanks to you, and thanks to you at home for watching. That's our show. Remember, always look outside your own box. Truths don't live in boxes, as we like to say. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you next time.